Good morning. How we doing? Okay, I'm excited to be here, and I'll tell you why. Because this is my heartbeat. Women in Bible study in small groups, I just believe in this. I believe this changes the world. And if you know anything about what I do, it is largely pushing women into local churches and into small group and into their Bibles. So this is really, truly my heartbeat is just to be in rooms like this, opening the Word of God with you. And I say with you because I really need you and want you to talk back to me today. So I've sat in the back of this Bible study many a day, and I have noticed something that y'all are just dang quiet. So that's not me at all. And you're going to have to, you know, talk back to me or this is not going to work. So I'm going to start with a question this morning. We are talking about 2 Corinthians 11. And what you're going to see in 2 Corinthians 11, and you know this because you've been sitting in this Bible study for a little while, is Paul's a little ticked. Paul's a lot ticked. Paul's angry. And what he's angry about is, ironically, he is not so angry about the false teachers. The false teachers don't surprise him. He's angry that his people, his disciples, are believing the false teachers. He actually doesn't, if you'll notice in the passage, he doesn't actually go to the false teachers and say, hey, stop teaching. He doesn't go after them. He goes to his people and he says, why are you acting confused? Do you know what the gospel I handed you, that I taught you? It's true. Don't be confused. And so I want to start this morning with the question, what ways are we confusing the gospel? Okay? In our culture, in your heart, in your friends' lives, in your kids' lives, in what ways are we confusing the gospel? And I need you to talk back, and I need you to talk back loudly. Go. Oh, thank you. Gender equality. Prosperity gospel. What? Love is love. Works. Good. It's really not a big deal. Legalism. Making it about us. There are multiple ways to God. What else? Follow your heart. Hell is not real. God is in a little bitty box. Ooh, I like that one. Let's talk about that one. We're going to stop there. I'm not going to call you up to make you talk, but I will say that what we're going to talk about today, what we're going to look at in this passage, Paul was not clear about what it was they were not believing about the gospel, but he was clear that it had to do with the gospel. And so what we're going to talk about today is how are we twisting the gospel? And guys, candidly, I always am talking to the people in the room. I'm not talking to your neighbors or your friends or the culture. I'm talking to you. And so what I want to propose is that we look at our own hearts and we consider, how are we believing a false gospel? Because the gospel that you believe is the gospel you will preach to the world, whether you ever open your mouth or not. The gospel you believe is the gospel you will preach to the world. And guys, what Paul knew is there were some things that were not worth fighting over, but there were some things that he was willing to sound like a crazy person. And that's how we start. 2 Corinthians 11, verse 1. He says this, I wish you could bear with me in a little foolishness. Do bear with me. Now, what he's saying is, I'm going to do some things I really hate doing. I'm going to defend my name. I'm going to boast in my accomplishments and my credibility. I'm going to do all this, and I hate that I have to do it. It's going to be foolishness to me. But we're going to go here, and the reason we're going to go here is verse 2, for I feel a divine jealousy for you since I betrothed you to one husband to present you as a pure virgin to Christ. And so what we see is that what bothers Paul is not that there's false teaching in the world. What bothers Paul is that his disciples are believing it. His disciples are believing it. And guys, when I prayed about this and I worked on this message for you, I was going, okay, Lord, I've been in this church now for 2.5 years. I also lead a ministry where I'm in a lot of churches and I'm getting to see across, you know, America and across the world, what are women prone to believe? Because what we're prone to believe is going to affect every other thing about us. And so I'm constantly considering and thinking, Where are we not believing God fully? Because that is the root of all sin. That is the root of all lies. That is the root of all doubt. That whatever we don't believe about God, that is what's going to translate into how we live. Are you with me? So it matters. It matters. And he knows this. And he actually says in the next verse, he says, "But I'm afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ." The first point of this fight that we're up against, because we are up against a fight. We are. Nobody's confused about this. Least of all our kids, okay? Least of all our kids that are teenagers or even younger than that, that they go to school and they hear and feel all kinds of confusing things. I mean, you cannot believe the fifth grade lunch table. Like, my son comes home and I'm like, I thought we were going to get to that in 4 years. Like, the things that he is wrestling with, the things that he hears at the lunch table, I'm like, oh my gosh. And so what do you do when your fifth grader comes home and says, "Mom, everybody is talking about J-Lo naked"? And I'm like, okay, baby, we're not just fighting a porn thing here. We're fighting a view of women. We're fighting for your future marriage. We're fighting for the way that you see and view me, baby. Like, this isn't about J-Lo. This isn't about pictures. This isn't about the Super Bowl, y'all. This is about how do we train our boys to see women, right? And so I get real feisty when that comes up, because I'm like, okay, well, first of all, way to tell me, you know, like, way to bring that home from fifth grade. And second of all, what are we going to do with that? And how are we going to process that? But you better believe that I get feisty. I'm not going to sit there and go, what do you think? Baby, what do you think? I'm going to say, let me tell you what the world's going to disciple you in. And here, I am going to fight for you to understand and believe truth. And not understand and believe truth on the surface. Understand and believe the root of the lie that it is that you're going to be tempted to believe. Does that make sense? Now, porn is not what Paul's talking about here. But almost everything you all just named had something to do with a cultural issue. And our first point is that we fight the enemy from confusing the truth. So if you did your homework, you know that that's ultimately what the enemy always does. You saw it in Genesis. You saw it in this passage, that he takes a little bit of truth and he builds on an enormous lie. And that enormous lie has enough truth in it that we somewhat fall for it. And I think where the enemy has gotten us right now, and I mean, I'm going to say this really humbly, and I'm going to ask you to talk back to me about this because I want to make sure I'm correct about this. When I was praying, God, where has this room, where have the women at my church, where have we believed something slightly confusing about the gospel? Because even in the passage, Paul points back to Genesis. He says, look back, this is how the serpent works. He's coming for you, and he's coming for you in your mind. He's coming to twist the thoughts. He's coming to just twist your view of God, because if your view of God can be shifted, then everything else will be just easy. It'll just be fruit off the vine, and that's what John 15 says. If you love God, if you abide with me, you're gonna have good fruit, and if you don't, you are not going to bear much fruit. In fact, it's gonna be pruned. So there is reality to what you believe about God and what you do with God when you're alone with him, your relationship with him, that is gonna be the most important thing. So if the enemy can twist that, he has us. So what, as Watermark women or those visiting for the first time, what have we believed wrongly about God? I do not think it is homosexuality is okay. I do not think it is about gender confusion. I do not think it is about other denominations. I think where we have believed wrongly about God is we think we can help ourselves. We think we can help ourselves. In our culture today, it's called self-help. It has an incredible history, if you read about it, where it came from. I think we're pretty sensitive to Tony Robbins and people that, you know, obviously aren't preaching the gospel. But guys, I don't think we're sensitive to the fact that we are living in this and acting like this every day. So let me talk about the repercussions of us believing in we can help ourselves. There is no supernatural power over your lives if you think you can help yourself. Throughout the history of the Old Testament, God was always diminishing their abilities to show his super ability. So if you look at stories throughout the Old Testament, we were just talking about this with my team over. If you look at the stories of the Old Testament, you see that he would tell armies like, hey, shrink down to 300 and go fight tens of thousands. Why would he do that? He would say, go walk around a wall with all those warriors up there where they're going to be laughing about you. Go walk around a wall, walk around a wall, walk around a wall, and it'll come down. And guys, we even barely pray about the biggest problems in our lives. If you want to know if there is one thing I would love to see happen for the women at Watermark, it's that we would start to pray scary prayers. That we would start to believe God could do incredible things. Because I do not ever want to be known for the practices and the practical things I help people do in their lives when the power of God was available to them. See, we are helping ourselves build lives that don't even need God. We're helping ourselves build lives that don't even need God. And then we're surprised that we are far from him. We're surprised that our lives don't tell this incredible story about him. And so what does it look like for us to believe this book in a bigger way? Because let me tell you, the enemy is so good at distracting us with cultural issues when the issue is the gospel we're preaching. And what Paul knew is let's go to our people. Let's go to our people. Let's pull them in close. I'm going to disciple you and make sure you understand the gospel, the pure, unspoiled, not added on to. What did he mean by that? In Galatians, you see that he means you don't add anything to the gospel. And if you add anything to the gospel is no longer our gospel. So what have we added on to the gospel? Because that is distracting people from the supernatural power of our God in our lives. There are times that I feel silly explaining things to other people because literally I don't have an answer except God. I don't have a marketing strategy. I don't have when we started If Gathering, it was like one or two of us. Like there was no plan. I remember after If Gathering, if you don't know what it is, it's a ministry that reaches across the world. After it blew up, all these media outlets reached out and said, can we talk to your marketing person? Can we talk? And I was like, we don't have that. Like, I don't know. There is not an answer except for God. Like, you can read articles of like them asking me these really smart questions. And I was like, God, like that's the answer in quotes from Jenny Allen. Like, God, and I want to live a life like that. But that's not unique to somebody that leads a nonprofit ministry, guys. That's the same God that wants to move in your places through you. To rescue, to save, so that people may know him. That is the way we've got to live, but we got to take more risk. And some of you do it. I was in a leader gathering this morning, and one of the women was like, yeah, I was driving on 35 with my friend, and she doesn't know God, and we were talking about Corona, and she's worried because she just heard a podcast on it. And I'm like, who wants to listen to a podcast about Corona? No, thank you. But what she said was, immediately back to her is, well, if the worst happens and you get Corona, where will you be? Where will you be if you die? She was like, I'll be on I-35 if I'm driving, And she was like, I felt bad because I didn't go on and on about, I didn't share everything else. And I was like, girl, you haunted her. Like that night on her pillow, she is going to be like, oh, crud, because I don't know where I'd be if I died. You guys are brave. I'm watching you do it. I just am saying, why not be braver? And check, where are you believing the lies of the enemy that there's something, anything you can do in your life without the power of God? That is a life that is distracting from the gospel. Let me tell you about the cultural issues of our day. You're never going to win those arguments. I would love, come out and talk to me afterwards. If you convince somebody that believes that homosexuality is fine, that they were convinced by your argument. You know what they believe? Life change. You know what they believe? The supernatural power of God that they cannot deny. And how has God changed your life? And how are you boasting about it? And how are you sharing about it? Because that fights the enemy. That fights the enemy. Number two, the next point. Fight for yourself to discern the truth. Now, there are places where we have worked and not surrendered. But what I'm about to say is going to sound like the opposite of that. It's going to sound like I'm calling you to work. But there is a word that we've forgotten and we've confused, and it's discipline. The discipline is this anchor that keeps us close to God, that is stronger, should be stronger or more powerful and more telling about our lives than our emotion and our feelings. But that discipline, what I've seen, is typically we kind of roll over here to discipline and work hard and perform, and we negate a supernatural presence of God in our life. Or we swing over here and we do the whole legalism bit about like, oh, you know, I walk with God, you know, in nature, you know. And I pray a lot, and we ignore the reality that this world is discipling us and we are not discipling ourselves with the word of God and the people of God and the spirit of God. And so we've got to realize that discipline is not works. Discipline is intentionality. When I say that we are preaching a false gospel with self-help, I am not saying that we negate everything and move away from legalism. I am saying that we surrender our lives. And surrender is not passive, as evidenced by Jesus Christ on a cross. It was incredibly active and decisive for him to hang on that cross. Surrender is trust. And the result of trust isn't works. The result of trust is a relationship. And so discipline is this anchor that keeps us in relationship. We have to know why we do it or we will get proud. We have to know why we do it or we will look down on other people because they don't. Discipline is about keeping a relationship. And any of you that are married know this. My husband, if we do not get a good conversation every couple of days and a good, you know what else, every, you know, I won't even say. And sometimes that's a choice. And so what you know is that then you're gonna drift apart. You're gonna notice that you start fighting more. You're gonna notice that your arms are crossed instead of a hug when he walks in the door. Like, you're gonna notice that relationship becomes distant. What discipline is meant to do and structure is meant to prioritize a relationship. One of my good friends this week, she said, "Jenny, I love you. You are so busy. And I love being your friend, but it feels like I never see you." And I was like, let's put it on the calendar every 2 weeks. So 2 weeks don't go by and we don't miss each other. Because why? And she goes, "No, I don't want to be that kind of friend that like requires your presence at a calendar meeting." I was like, this is me prioritizing you. This is me saying, I love you and I want this on my calendar. This is not legalism. This is, I love you and I want to see you and I want to make sure a month doesn't go by and we haven't caught up. We've got to be intentional. And intentionality is one of the ways that we fight for ourselves to believe truth. And Paul has such a deep desire for the Corinthians to do this. Look at verse 4. "For if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus than the one we have proclaimed, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or if you accept a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it readily enough." He's saying, know your gospel. Know your gospel, because he's saying, if anybody comes, I'm not expecting them to not come and preach you a different gospel. I'm expecting you to know the difference. I'm expecting you to know the right one. And if you're trained and you're ready and you're prepared, then you're gonna know the right one. John Piper talks about it this way, that we are a generation of jellyfish. That we are a generation of jellyfish, that we are soft. We don't have a lot of muscle. And what we do is we float on the waves, like James, we float on the waves of doubt and we ride the wave and we ride the wave. And if the food doesn't end up in our little tentacles, we don't eat. Because jellyfish can't go get their own food. They're just whatever can come exactly to them in a really pithy, cute way. That's all they're going to get. And he's saying, we need to be training a generation of dolphins. See, dolphins, they can cut through anything to get what they want and what they need. They are strong and they are intentional to go get the food that they need to eat so that they can stay strong and they can stay intentional. And some of you are like, you know what? I am trained in my Bible and I know this because I've been coming to this Bible study. You all know the Bible perhaps more than any women I've ever been in rooms with. And I'm not just saying that. Some of you are brand new. You are in a great spot. And the reason you're in a great spot is because you have an abundance of spiritual mothers here that can disciple you. You all are great. Most of you are excellent discerners of truth. You have this in spades. But the world does not. And the world is craving spiritual mothers. Whatever age you are, are you spiritually mothering people? And while I love Bible study and I believe that's a great place for it, that's not enough. Let me tell you what spiritual motherhood looks like. It looks like coming alongside of people. And if you are in a stage where those people really need to come alongside you, pay them to babysit. Pay them to babysit. And then when you get home from your date, don't do this. When you get home from running errands, have a talk. What's going on? How are you doing? Get them opening up. Like, find ways to spirit. Some of my greatest disciples were my babysitters those years because they were in my house. And I paid them to be there. And some of y'all know the story. I literally, when those girls were young, and some of them would say, like, Jenny, will you teach me the Bible? I'd say, if you fold my socks, I will open my Bible. And I will teach it to you. And now, one of them's named Allie. She is in Houston, and she has all her babysitters fold her socks, and she teaches them the Bible. This room has no excuse. You have more Bible than 99.9% of the world. This room has no excuse. If there are cultural issues that our generation is bobbing on the waves of, we are the culprits. I live with that reality all the time. I'm not confused that there are other Bible teachers in the world writing really poor books with really bad theologies. I would just be accountable if I didn't write what God has put in me to write with sound theology. That is what we are accountable for. Who are you discipling and giving away sound theology to? Because that's how we change the world. Jesus knew it. He had 12. And that leads us to the next one. We fight for others to believe the truth. We fight for others to believe the truth. And what I know is Paul was a zealot for the right things. I'm not saying a perfect zealot, but he was a zealot for the right things. And he understood that it did no good to go into city squares and shout about who was wrong and who was right and what they believed. He went to his people and he fought for them to believe the truth. He went to the church and he said, hey guys, come here. Let's believe the truth together because this matters. It affects everything. I don't think we realize, and this is where I want to close, I don't think we realize what it's affecting. I don't think we realize the implications, or I think we would be such zealots for this. And I don't mean such zealots for platforms. I mean such zealots for discipleship. Such zealots for discipleship that we would look out at the world and we would see confusion and we would put more and more girls in our living rooms. That we would look out and see confusion and we would have more and more brave conversations. I can't tell you how much I believe in local church and discipleship. It is how my life changed. It's how I believe other lives change. I literally believe every single thing and opportunities God has given me is simply to remind a generation and call them back to discipleship is the way. And some of you are like, I've never heard of this word. Why does she keep saying it? Let me tell you what it means. It means follow me as I follow Christ. Come on. Come on. Because knowledge only goes so far. How do we fight for others to believe truth like Paul fought? Paul was so zealous. That's why I like him so much, because I am too, and I get it. Like, he came out of his skin about things. And what did he come out of his skin about? What fired him up? What? God. The gospel. That was it. Like, he would correct other issues, but you want to see him get unglued? That's what he got unglued about. Okay, where's Casey? Casey, come here. Casey. Will you do some jumping jacks for me? Casey, on the right shoes. Jumping, just go. Go. Okay, ignore her. Just ignore her. Okay, here's what I know. is there are things on the line because we are not getting the gospel right in our hearts, okay? I'm not talking about out there. I'm not talking about the internet. I'm not talking about your friends. I'm saying in our hearts, there are things we have believed wrongly about the gospel, and we have worked really hard to show everybody a right view of Jesus. And in working really hard to show everybody a right view of Jesus, we have actually loved that they see a right view of us. And our stories cannot be those that go and perform and do great things for God. And do great things for God. And we don't ever boast about what it is that he did for us. Okay, you can stop. Okay, I'm gonna give you a drink of water because I know you're thirsty. Okay, here's water. Wait, you have a choice. What do you want? You want Gatorade. Well, pick. Okay, don't drink that. Okay.
Sorry.
You can have the water. I want to be really clear. We're not talking about a little off of center with the gospel in our generation. We're talking about something that will kill people. Like, this is cleaning solution. I would not have let you drink it. I promise. I'm glad. I wouldn't have. Okay, you can go. You can take it. It's clean. We're talking about something that can kill people. And Paul knew it. And when Paul knew that they might go to hell, all of a sudden the issues of the day with head coverings and all that got a little bit lost on the fact that people are going to hell. Like, this is what's on the line. We're not talking about Gatorade and water. We're talking about life and death and hell and heaven. What Paul knew is, I will fight for you because you have to get this right. This isn't a little bit wrong. This will lead you to hell. So if we're gonna get feisty, team, let's get feisty about the things that are leading people to hell. God, I pray for these women. I pray for the lives they touch. I'm always well aware that I'm never speaking to a room full of women. I'm speaking to every woman they know because I know good and well how you change the world. It's not through microphones and talks and Bible studies, God. It's through life on life discipleship. You knew it. It's what you gave your life to when you were here, Jesus. So I pray for every woman, friend, child, man that these women know. And God, I pray right now that the people would be brought to their minds, God, people that don't know the pure, unadulterated Jesus gospel, God. I pray, God, that there would be many, many people saved because of the lives of the women in this room, God. Would we be courageous? Would we risk? Would we lead lives that need you? And where, God, we have believed lies, would you make it so clear? And where we have gotten independent of you, God, would you convict us? And where we have lived lives that don't boast of you, but boast of us, God, convict us and bring us back, pull us in. And I know, God, if Paul felt that jealous, if I feel this jealous, if in this room we feel this jealous for your gospel, I cannot imagine how you feel, how passionately you feel that we get Jesus Christ right. He came to earth, the Son of God, fully man, fully God. He died a sinner's death, though he never sinned. And he was raised from the dead on the third day. And God, you have made a way for us to believe only that and be in a right relationship with you. So help us boast in that. Help us spend our lives giving that away in every way we can. Show us how to do it. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, guys.